Sawbones is a show about medical history, and nothing the hosts say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. It's for fun. Can't you just have fun for an hour and not try to diagnose your mystery boil? We think you've earned it. Just sit back, relax, and enjoy a moment of distraction from that weird growth. You're worth it.
All right. Song is about some books. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4.
Welcome, everybody, and welcome to Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. I'm your co-host, Justin McElroy.
And I'm Sydney McElroy.
Yes, yes, we all know. We have something more important to discuss. My brother, not 3 minutes ago. Let me take you back.
We were right there.
Wait.
We saw the whole thing
we
from
saw
right
the
there.
Whole thing. Let me back up. Today, my family went to the Ruby Slipper Cafe. I did not. I went and took my daughter, my baby, back for a nap because I'm a hero. I ate a lamp-heated sandwich that I bought at a store. That's not important. I come downstairs and I ask, we're going to the aquarium. I don't want to, but we have to because we go to the aquarium every time.
We go anywhere. Not because it's not great. He was just kind of tired.
We go to the aquarium every time because we have so many children, and they delight in the fish. And I'm there, and I think, I don't want to do this, but I will. And who is missing? My bearded brother. I ask, where is he? And friends, I'm here to tell you that despite what he just said, he was upstairs taking a nap alone in a bed for 2 hours. So, if you don't listen to Schmanners, he said at the end of, or they haven't published that one, that he said to Schmanners that it's not important. Anyway, he lied to you, and I'm so sorry to begin our evening that way, but my brother lied to you.
We're just really jealous because we haven't slept like that
since
13.
Anyway, that's not why we're here, folks. We're here to talk about
not just to dunk on Travis.
Not just to dunk on Travis. Although, you know what? I could do 27 minutes of material dunking on Travis. But no, we have something better to talk about. Sydney, what is it?
Because we have gotten to go a lot of fun places since we've been here, and I had a specific destination in mind when I found out we were coming to New Orleans. There was a certain place that I really wanted to go, and that was the Pharmacy Museum. I was really excited to get to see it in person. I'd checked it out online, and I'd heard about it. Some of our listeners had emailed me saying, like, you'd love this place, you should check it out, and so I got to go. And I want to talk about it.
That sounded like a story that had a twist, but there was no twist.
No, we just went. We went to it.
We went to it. And now we're going to talk about it.
The really cool thing, the history behind the Pharmacy Museum, is that New Orleans is home to the first licensed pharmacist in the United States of America. The very first one to actually, like, be licensed to be a pharmacist and do what he was doing is from right here, which is really cool because before that, much like being a physician, being a pharmacist in the US in the early 1800s, 1700s, was just like, you just said you were.
Hey, I've got some pills. That I don't.
I made these.
I
Do
made
you want
these.
Them?
I've got pills. Do you want them for money?
You may have certainly studied. Certainly there was a wide variety of training backgrounds. There were some that actually studied and learned about different medicines of the day. Some of those were actual medicines. Many were not.
Some were cocaine.
Well, a lot were cocaine. Like half. And you probably did some apprenticeship, but it was really easy. And
did you say apprenticeship?
Apprenticeship.
Thank you. Okay. I thought we had to introduce cursing for the first time on Sawbones. I didn't know why you got so blue.
No.
Some apprentice.
Dookie.
Some apprentice dookie.
apprentice dookie. It's funny. It's a funny word.
Okay.
You may have just been from a family of apothecaries, and you were just like, well, I'm part of the family business. I do this now. I make pills, and I give them to people, and I tell people what they should take as medicine because that was part of the job of a pharmacist. In 1804, Louisiana became the first state to pass a law that said, you know what, we should probably try to standardize this. We should regulate it and say, like, there is a bar that you have to meet to be a pharmacist. And in the state, it was a three-hour exam that was administered by pharmacists and physicians. So you had to answer a series of questions. And if you passed it, then you could be a licensed pharmacist. So it was actually, it's funny, that was passed in 1804. It would be a while before anybody actually took and passed the exam.
You think they had a bit where they're like, we made this too hard.
Well, I imagine for a while nobody bothered.
Yeah.
Because it was still like, if you had your store and people came to it and you were like, I'm unlicensed, but look at all my opium pills.
In fact, the first person to get licensed kind of ruined it for everybody else, right? If all of us are unlicensed, then we're all pharmacists.
There we go. You ever thought about that? That's
you ever
deep.
Think? Ooh, man.
Maybe we're
deep,
all pharmacists. We're not. No. We're not. So Louis DeFilo Jr. is who we're going to talk about. He was born in France in 1788. He was the son of Jean DeFilo and Jean-Marie Bonnet, and they moved the whole family to New Orleans around 1800. And he came from a family of pharmacists as well. His brother was a pharmacist and his dad was a pharmacist. But he was the first one in 1816 after he went to the College of Pharmacy back in France. He came back over and sat for the exam, and in 1816 he became the first one to pass an exam and say, I am actually a pharmacist. So as of 1816, the U.S. had their first actual licensed pharmacist. He started a business at first with his brother, and then he eventually opened his pharmacy, which is what is now the Pharmacy Museum that you can still go visit if you'd like to. I would highly recommend it if you haven't been there. If you live here and you haven't been here, what are you doing? Go there.
Yeah.
It's like check it out.
It's like $3.
No, it was five, but...
Six? It might have been six. I don't know.
No, it was five.
It was less than seven. We can all agree on that.
It was five, and it was well worth it, and our kids were free.
You can't beat that. Why are we doing an ad?
I actually looked it up
ahead of time. We got a Groupon going if you want to get there for $4.50.
I looked it up ahead of time because we've got little kids, and I was like, this is cool for kids, right? And they're basically like, we welcome children. You're totally allowed to bring your kids. It may freak them out, so if that bothers you, don't. And I was like, wow.
Also, we have 1 million small glass bottles. We're not the kind of kids that break small glass things, right? Because those we're not crazy about. So if you got the kind that don't love to smash small things. I spent a lot of time in the patio.
It's like, don't touch anything. So at this point in history, as I kind of alluded to, a pharmacist was more than what you think of as like the person who you go to and they can, you know, administer the, like if you think of a commercial pharmacist, somebody who you would go to a pharmacy and get your medicine from, and they can kind of like advise you on it, tell you some of the side effects, what to take and not to do and that kind of thing. A pharmacist at the time would also be diagnosing and maybe even treating illness in a way that we don't traditionally think of pharmacists as of doing. And so you would go to his pharmacy and tell him like, I got these symptoms, I don't know what's going on. And you wouldn't have necessarily been to a physician or anything. And he would tell you, hey, you should take this or that. He was also making the medicines, which most of the time is not done, like at Walmart. they're not like making the pills back there. I don't think.
Don't look at me. I'm an unlicensed pharmacist.
And this was a really exciting time. When he opened his pharmacy, this was a really exciting time in history to be running a pharmacy, because medicine was changing in that we had just kind of started to understand the germ theory of disease, that we pass germs from person to person, and that was responsible for a lot of illness. It wasn't necessarily like clouds of bad air. So
wasn't necessarily clouds of bad air, you say?
Which was still, it was still a huge battle between doctors at the moment. The miasma theory, is it just that like disease happens because things smell bad and then you get sick?
Yes.
Or is it because there are germs? And so this was a really exciting time to be practicing medicine, which a pharmacist would have been doing, essentially practicing medicine. Anesthesia was a new thing. New Orleans was the fastest growing city in the U.S. at this point, so there were tons of people coming in. Yeah.
This was over 100 years ago, guys. Calm down.
And along with all these people also came yellow fever, which is not as...
What?
Why are you excited about that?
What's wrong with you? You act like you were watching a Mighty Ducks remake and Emilio Estevez just showed up. It's him! Coach Bombay, he's in it! He wasn't on the press tour or anything, I can't believe it. They hide this. Love that fool. Coach Bombay, quack, quack, quack. Love that guy.
So, yellow fever. Which...
Stop it.
Fan favorite, yellow fever.
We've broken you, people.
I know. I'm not going to say anything as good as the as yellow fever.
Apparently, yeah, apparently.
Right. That's it. Just say that. There we go.
Finally, something got a louder cheer than Sydney, and it's yellow fever.
So it would cause periodic epidemics in the city, and people would get really sick, and sometimes they died. Are we still cheering?
Oh, there's a twist. All right, let's lower the rowdiness a little bit, because there's somebody in here with yellow fever that's like single tear, like, I can't believe this.
There were a lot of names for yellow fever. My favorite, that I was going to mention them all, but I just wanted to mention my favorite was the saffron scourge. It was my favorite of them. But it spread by mosquitoes, and it would cause periodic epidemics, and everybody was trying to figure out what should we do about it. Dufilo is interesting in that he was one of the people recommending quinine, which is good for malaria. Is not necessarily, but this was a more science-based approach than we had seen so far. Like, you have a fever, this is good for other fevers. That was closer. Especially when you consider that a lot of the other treatments that people were trying for yellow fever at the time were, let's shoot some cannons off.
Cool.
The city tried that a lot. Burn barrels of tar.
What was the rationale there?
The bad air would go away.
The stinky tar air would push out the yellow fever air.
Which is similar to like the cannons thing. Also, maybe they're loud.
They should fire the cannons into the tar and get this party started.
I liked a lot of the treatments would depend on like just what doctor or pharmacist you happen to talk to. And so some of them were like, what you need is you need bloodletting, so I'm going to cut you and bleed you or put some leeches on you. I'm going to give you mercury. This is going to be terrible, but I'm going to save your life. And then a different doctor might say, you need some champagne and oysters. That's all you need. It's fine. I think the easiest was just like, I don't know, go lay in bed and pray a lot. Fingers crossed.
We still try that one.
It's interesting because like they compared all these different methods, because a lot of them too would depend on like where some of the doctors immigrated from. Like German doctors did a certain thing and French doctors did a certain thing, and they compared like who did the best, and it was, I mean, nothing really mattered. Nobody was doing anything that helped. So everybody came out the same. Everybody's odds were pretty much equal. So I would go with the champagne and oyster one if it were me.
Yeah, I mean, all things being equal.
Were it I. So in the day, as I mentioned, pharmacists were making their own meds. They would mix them from plants or minerals or even insects, whatever. They would make their pills. They would make injectable ingredients and things that you could, and then give you the hypodermic needles, stuff that you could inject. They had the, if you go to the museum, you'll see these, the big bottles that are filled with like multicolored fluids and liquids and things. And they were called snow globes, not like we think about them, not like snow globes.
Yeah, I know they weren't literal snow globes.
No. But they would like be used to like attract people in because you'd look and go, wow, look at that giant bottle full of multicolored medicine.
I gotta give me some of that.
I
so
like
there
that.
Is the Tide Pods of their day, right?
More or
so
less.
So colorful. You know what? I would love some medicine. Hey, honey, let's stop in.
I love that humans work that way. That's so colorful. I gotta go in and get some medicine from that guy.
That's how barber poles work, right? Man, that pole is colorful as heck.
These were
I gotta get some blood out of me.
These were reminiscent of barber poles. This was the idea. It was the same
actually
the same principle of a barber pole. It was like here's a multicolored thing in the window to go, oh.
Humans are rad.
I like the colors. I'll get some medicine. So DeFilo himself was not content to just operate his pharmacy and take care of people that way. He also joined the Howard Association, which was sort of, if you think of like a precursor to what the Red Cross is, same kind of idea. It was an association of like doctors and nurses and social workers and then just good people who got together and would like go take care of people in their home. And he spent like a lot of time volunteering his time and taking care of people. So he's a really good guy, and he donated a lot of money back and really like used his position as the first licensed pharmacist in the U.S. to do a lot of good for the community. If you hear about the pharmacy, as I was reading about it and like learning about the history, you're always going to like, at the end, they want to tack on like, and also it's haunted.
That's the, you got to think about it, though. Run the stats, folks. That's a lot of old-timey medical stuff. There's going to be some ghosts in there. I mean, ghosts are going to get in there.
I didn't like to dwell on that because it's supposedly haunted by the guy that he sold it to. So not DeFilo or his family, because he actually, the pharmacy was downstairs and then him and his family lived in the apartment upstairs. It's actually haunted by the guy who he sold it to, who was a pharmacist and kind
of... It's not actually haunted.
No, I'm not saying it's haunted. I'm saying this is the...
Supposedly haunted.
Allegedly haunted.
Weird twist for Sawbones. Very hard on fake medicine, very easy on ghosts.
I'm still just a doctor. I have absolutely no expertise in that arena. I'm not saying it's haunted.
Not saying it's not.
No, I'm just saying that the story goes that DuPas, who bought it from DeFilo, actually is the one who... haunts the place now, and he was into some shady business. But I'm not going to dwell on the ghosts. I want to focus on what the museum is and some of the neat stuff, because we got to go there.
Yes.
And if you haven't been, you really should check it out. Like I said, it's two floors, and the bottom was where he actually operated and like sold all of the medicines, and you can see all that stuff. And then the top floor, which also has a bunch of the medicines and stuff from the day, was originally where they lived.
It's like incredibly, I don't think I've ever seen a museum like this that is so dense with stuff. Like literally every inch of this place is like, I kept calling Sydney over like, Sid, you gotta see, look at this wild, you know, breast bump or what have you. It's crazy, you gotta see it.
It was great, we brought our kids and Charlie walked over to a picture and went, is that a gummy worm? And I said, no, that's a leech. And she said, well, what's that? And I was like, not candy.
Yeah.
And then she was done, I think.
Yeah, then she went out.
She was done.
They have a fountain.
She said,
Can I go outside? If it's not gummy worm, I'm actually going to go play in that fountain. It's like.
I don't know what mommy's into, but I'm not into it. There's a wonderful courtyard, which would have been used at the time most likely to grow herbs and things for the medicines that DeFilo was making inside. So that whole courtyard would have been like a garden and that would have been pretty typical for a pharmacy of the era to have your own little herb garden to grow all the medicines that you were going to sell. Some of my favorite things. So first of all, there's a letter from a druggist of the era, like announcing it was another druggist than DeFilo, but just kind of to give you a flavor of what would have happened when a new pharmacy opened, announcing to the public, like, I'm opening a pharmacy, and at my pharmacy, I will be selling drugs, chemicals, patent medicines, toilet articles, stationery, cigars, and soda water.
So everything. His name was Cedric Vesuvius Sinclair.
CVS.
Thank you. It's not a big deal.
That's where
it's
that joke was going.
I hope you all like that one because it's not in the recorded version of the podcast. That one ain't gonna make the MP3. It probably did. If you're hearing me say that wasn't an error. I liked it. And I edit the show, so now it's in there. His name was Bill Walgreens, so I'll just cut that in. That's the magic of editing, folks.
So it,
his initials were CVS.
You can keep saying it, but it's not landing better.
It's a creeper. It creeps up on you. You're going to be driving home like, CVS, okay. Nice. Like the pharmacy. Nice.
The medicines that escalate macabre for the mouth.
So what's neat is that it's really cool to go there and see medicine of the day was a mixture. Because as I said, this was like a crossroads where there were people trying to like push for scientific basis of medicine, like of diagnosis and treatment and what are we doing and why are we doing it? And let's all do the same thing. Let's not just keep giving, you know, opium because it makes our patients feel good. Let's try to do science. And at the same time, it was still a business and people were still trying to make money and get people to come back. And so they're also selling things that don't work but are very popular at the time. So if you go, you'll find this whole mixture of like medicines and like big, like I said, like the big jars with different liquids in them. You'll see like the opium and cocaine and marijuana and tobacco and all those things. There's a soda fountain because it was very common. Soda at the time was used as like a medicinal beverage, various, you know, sodas. So there's a soda fountain where you can go get medicine. But you'll also find things like voodoo charms and gree-gree kind of things, like amulets to protect you that were also sold in that same pharmacy alongside like some sort of ampule of medicine or hypodermic syringe full of medicine. So it was a really neat time. There's also all kinds of equipment you can see, like tools of the era that would have been used, like a trephination drill.
That's awesome.
You know, to drill a hole in your head, which we tell you not to do.
But if you ever want to do it, now you know where you can pick one up.
There is one there.
They won't let you use it.
A lot of the things I had heard of before as I was wandering through the museum, but one thing that I found that I thought was really interesting, I'd never heard of, they have a collection of pills that are coated in gold or silver. And I was aware, we've talked about on the show before, that both gold and silver have been used as medicine in various forms for different things through the ages. But that's not what these pills are for. This is for the aesthetic quality of coating your pills in gold or silver. So they were specifically aimed at like the wealthy clientele to say like, I know those aspirin look good, but would you like them in gold? So you could upcharge rich people by coating their medicine in gold or silver and they would be more likely to take them. The thing about it is that the gold and silver, I mean, they're not doing anything. You're not digesting it. You're not breaking it down. So there's a chance that these pills are not actually being absorbed in any way.
Great.
So whatever you coated in gold or silver, I mean, let's be honest, it probably didn't work anyway, just
right,
based on the time.
Right, because it was probably dust and cocaine.
But even that, you probably weren't absorbing because it was coated in the gold and silver.
I don't know.
I guess you would see that, though, when it came
out. Hey, is that pill?
The other end.
What the heck?
And it would be a very impressive bowel movement the next day.
A very impressive bowel movement.
I hope that was on the bottle.
When you don't want to get better, but do want a very impressive bowel movement, reach for it.
We've done a show before. We've talked a lot on the show about the concept of hysteria, which was this, I mean, it was a fake disease that often women were labeled with because they weren't behaving in a way that society wanted them to behave at that time in history. But I specifically, I was interested on a section I saw about hysteria of the nose and throat, because I've never heard of it as like hysteria of a body part. It's usually like that person is hysterical. Yeah. So give them opium. That's usually what you do. Just give them opium. But this was specifically aimed at hysteria of the nose and throat. And it was this whole description from a doctor from the 1800s saying, now sometimes, and again, it was aimed at a woman, sometimes a woman will say she's lost her sense of smell, and I don't believe her. So I think it's hysteria of the nose. Her nose is hysterical. And what he proposes is...
Now wait, before Sydney finishes, if you're a dude in the room, take my advice. Remain perfectly still until this section is completed. Make no movements or facial expressions or say anything. Remain perfectly still. All right, Sydney, continue.
What he goes on to propose is that it would go away on its own, but what he would do is a fake sort of operation to make her think he did something, and then it will definitely go away because you've tricked her.
That's outrageous.
Another display that I found was also very popular on the internet as I was researching this, the museum before I actually got to see it in person, and I did get to see it in person, are Dr. Young's self-retaining rectal dilators.
I miss those.
They're exactly what you think they are. But I like...
They're butt plugs.
They look like butt plugs.
They're butt plugs, folks.
Old-timey butt plugs.
A butt plug by any other name would smell...
We shan't. I liked, though...
Not bad language, but challenging ideas, Sawbones.
That's a good description. That's probably somewhere in our iTunes reviews.
I would prefer they curse. Honestly, I would rather they curse.
But I like specifically, so these rectal dilators, I looked like, what were these for exactly? And they on the display, it says they are for the permanent cure of piles, that would have been hemorrhoids, constipation, nervousness, dyspepsia, sick headache, neuralgia, rheumatism, insomnia, asthma, indigestion, eczema, all disease caused by sluggish circulation, malnutrition, defective elimination, and the use of cathartic drugs. All of that can be solved.
Hey, beloveds, if you want a cure-all, try honey, huh? Maybe honey would be better than that.
I appreciated there was a section on homeopathy. We talk a lot about homeopathic cures on Sawbones because they don't...
You forgot to do the air quotes.
They don't work.
Yeah.
In case you're not familiar, homeopathy is when you take something and you put it in some water, and then you take a drop of that and put it in some water, and you take a drop of that and put it in some water, and you take a drop of that and put it in some water.
And you sell it at Walmart for $8.
You have a bottle of water.
Yeah.
But it has other words on it, and then you sell it to people. So it doesn't work, but there's this plaque kind of commemorating homeopathy in New Orleans, and the first homeopathic doctor was a Dr. Taft, who came in 1853 and made a ton of money selling homeopathic things, treatments, cures, whatever word you want to use, homeopathic things, for a year, and then died. But in that year, he made a ton of money.
And what did he die of?
It was during the yellow fever epidemic, so I'm...
Fan favorite, yellow fever.
Anyway, homeopathy. My favorite part is that there's the story of homeopathy, and then they get into the, there was another doctor who started proposing dosimetric granules, which were like very tiny little amounts of plants, but he was like, it's better than homeopathy because there's actually plant material in this tiny granule that I'm going to give you. It's still very small. There's no way it does anything, but it's not water, so it's better. And he described homeopathy. This was my favorite description ever of homeopathy. It is throwing a milligram of a substance somewhere in the Seine at the place where the rivers enter, where the river enters Paris, and drinking a few drops of that same water where it comes out. That's homeopathy.
Or bottling that and selling it at Walmart. Again, it's right there.
In addition, some other, what I like to think of as fun things, and then as I was listing my fun things from the museum that I would recommend, I thought, I'm strange. There's also like some great metal catheters, if you want to see of a time when we would catheterize your bladder with a metal tube. You can see those. There's a giant leeches jar. I don't think there are leeches in it now.
There aren't, I looked.
But I did, you did?
I did. That's right before I left to go to the courtyard. Remember when you excused me to the patio? You told the kids to take me out to the patio?
There's Hadacol.
Oh, we were stoked to see Hadacol. We had a whole plaque about Cousin Dudley LeBlanc, and I was so stoked to see real Hadacol.
One of our favorite patent medicines.
One of our favorite patent medicines. Everybody's got their favorite patent medicine, and ours, one of ours is Hadacol.
Along with Lydia Pinkham's vegetable compound for female weakness.
It's like our
you
number
can check
two.
That out.
There should be an all-girl punk band called Lydia Pinkham's Vegetable Compound for Female Weakness.
And then my other favorite, there was a breast pump from 1870. I just personally appreciated this. As someone who has used a breast pump many, many times in my life, this breast pump was essentially, it's not painful. It was almost like a syringe pump, with this very small collecting thing at the end, and you would just pump, sort of like a trombone kind of event, to use the suction to get very small amounts of breast milk that couldn't possibly...
It was so small that I assume you had your baby there, like, go ahead, drink up, pal. All right, clean it out.
But if you haven't checked it out, you should really go check out the Pharmacy Museum. You can get information, pharmacymuseum.org. You can get information about their times and prices and all that kind of stuff. But I would really recommend it because it was amazing to see all this stuff. It's a wonderful collection.
It's so, right here in New Orleans. So
check it out.
Good job, New Orleans. And good job for having us here. We've had such a good time. You have no idea. It's been such a blast. And you all have been so fun, too. So thank you to the Orpheum Theater for having us. And thank you to Paul. And thank you to the taxpayers for the use of our song Medicines as the intro and outro of our program.
And thank you to Yellow Fever for getting the biggest cheer of the night.
Anyway, that's going to do it for us. Until next time, my name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And as always, don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.